WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here today with us. A beautiful Sunday morning. No snow on the ground, at least not here. One of our guests today, Jeff Skelly. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
Well, and thank you for being here. One of our other challenges, at least for me today, is we're going to have a guest participating by telephone. Are you with me, Rebecca?
I am, yes, hello.
Good morning, thank you so much. Rebecca Glenberg is the legal director at the ACLU of Virginia. We're participating from a secret spot because you're involved in one of these two cases. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Rebecca, can you hear Jeff? Jeff, can you hear Rebecca?
I can hear her.
Yes, I can hear.
Excellent. So we'll be participating this way. If you want to call in during the hour, you won't be able to use the regular phone because we're using Rebecca for that, but you can call in on the house phone. That's 434-971-4096, and we'll pass along your question or comment to today's guests. Well, we are going to be talking about the same-sex marriage case here in the state of Virginia, and actually there are two. One of them is getting all the notoriety. And Rebecca, being the legal director at the ACLU of Virginia, you told me that you are heavily involved in one of the two cases, so we'll try and refrain from talking about that one as much as possible. I realize you have duties and standards involved with that. But can you explain the basic premise of these two cases, why those who are challenging the case are doing so? Because it's not just, hey, we're gay and we don't think it's right that this ban applies.
Right. Well, the premise is that the bans on marriage for same-sex couples in Virginia violates the Constitution in a couple different ways. One, it violates the Due Process Clause because, as the Supreme Court has repeatedly recognized, marriage is a fundamental right that is protected by the Due Process Clause of the Constitution, and people cannot be deprived of that right without a very good reason. And secondly, that it violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment because, again, one group is being treated differently from another group for no good reason.
Now, the folks in the Norfolk case, or let me talk about this and tell me where I'm right and where I'm wrong. My understanding is that one of these specific challenges in the Norfolk case is that there are two males who wish to be married and who are not allowed to do so, and that the two challengers in the Harrisonburg case, I believe that's where it's taking place, are already married under the law of California, but that marriage is not recognized in the state of Virginia, and so therefore there are, benefits that this couple cannot receive that otherwise that they might.
Actually, that's not quite correct. In both cases, there are two couples, and in each case, there's one couple who is not married and who wishes to marry in Virginia, and a second couple who was married in another jurisdiction. In our case, the couple was married in D.C., and their marriage is not recognized in Virginia where they live. So actually, both cases have both these kinds of plaintiffs, and both are challenging both the prohibition on getting a marriage license in Virginia for same-sex couples and also Virginia's refusal to recognize the marriages that were lawfully entered into in other states.
This is Rebecca Glenberg. She's the legal director at the ACLU of Virginia. Jeff Skelly from UVA Center for Politics, also the associate editor for Larry Sabato's Crystal Ball, with us today. This is WNRN. as well as 91.9 and Lexington's 95.3 here today. So, Rebecca, why do we have two cases if they are effectively saying the same or making the same challenge? And they're both in federal court. I thought that one of these was in state court since the challenge is against the state law.
Well, both of them are actually in federal court, and the Norfolk one is in the Eastern District of Virginia, and the Harrisonburg one are cases in the Western District of Virginia. And the reason why there are two cases, I mean, these two cases were filed within a couple of weeks of each other. Obviously, each group of plaintiffs and lawyers had been preparing for their case for a long time, and each of us was very eager to go forward on behalf of our clients. You know, it's an important issue, and one that was made more salient by the Supreme Court's recent decisions in June. And once those decisions came down, a lot of people recognized that Virginia was ripe for such a challenge, because Virginia has one of the most restrictive statutes and constitutional amendments when it comes to the prohibition on same-sex marriage. So I think that, you know, advocates for equal rights, once that Supreme Court decision came down, all of us were very anxious to proceed and get marriage equality in Virginia as soon as possible.
Rebecca, do you think that the fact that one of these cases is in the Eastern District versus the Western District, is there the chance that they will be, does that make a difference? I guess I'm not trying to ask you whether or not what you think the outcome may be, but does it make a difference that they are in two different courts here in the state?
I don't think it makes that much difference. I mean, what's really important is the judge, even more than the court that the judge is in. But I think that both we in our case and the attorneys in the other case have cause for optimism, given the trend in the last few months. Every federal court that has considered the question has found these marriage bans to be unconstitutional after the Supreme Court's rulings in June. So I think that both of the cases in both of the courts are, have reasons for optimism.
We are talking about the same-sex marriage case here in the state of Virginia, and some of the decisions that have been made regarding it, such as Attorney General Mark Herring not having, I guess, sidestepping. See, and now you get into word choice. It makes you sound like I have sides to be taken, and that's not my goal today. We are talking about the same-sex marriage case in Virginia, some of the decisions made in representing it and defending it, and some of the backlash that goes with that. We've been listening, talking with Rebecca Glenberg. She's from the ACLU of Virginia. We also have Jeff Skelly here. So, Jeff, let me bring you into this. I use the word sidestepping, I immediately stop with concern that that's a poor choice of words, but the Attorney General, Mark Herring, made it clear before this case came about that he was not going to defend it personally.
Yes. Herring decided that he would not defend the state's constitutional ban on same-sex marriage before federal court. And he specifically said, Virginia has argued on the wrong side of some of our nation's landmark cases in school desegregation in 1954, on interracial marriage in the 1967 Loving decision, and in 1996 on opening VMI to female cadets. It's time for the Commonwealth to be on the right side of history and on the right side of the law. So clearly he's of the opinion that the ban is is unconstitutional, and that he personally disagrees with it is what I would take from that statement.
So who is representing the case? Is Virginia as the proponent of the constitutional law not defending it in any way? If your attorney general says, you know, never mind, not me, who is doing it, and how are they representing the state?
Well, at least in the Norfolk case, the job of defending the ban has been left to the local circuit court's clerk as well.
Tell me, I always want to hear, oh, he clerked for so-and-so. Who is the clerk?
I actually don't know. Rebecca,
do you know? Give me the definition of a clerk.
Well, the clerk of courts in these cases are the clerks of the state circuit court, and the state circuit courts are the entities that in Virginia issue marriage licenses, and the clerks are local elected officials who run the administrative side of those courts. So the clerk of court in Norfolk, who's a defendant in the Norfolk case, and the clerk of court in Stanton, who's a defendant in our case, are ultimately responsible for issuing marriage licenses in those jurisdictions, and that's why they're defendants in these cases.
But who is, if Attorney General Herring is not representing the state, or help me understand this a little bit, if Attorney General Herring has said, you know, I'm not going to do this. Some people consider his job. Some people consider his decision to be his job. Who is doing that work? If the highest ranking attorney in the state of Virginia is not fulfilling this role, who is, and what is their skill level?
Well, again, as Jeff said, in the Norfolk case, there are two defendants, and one is the state official, Janet Rainey, who's represented by the Attorney General, and the other is this clerk of court, his name is Schaefer in Norfolk, who has his own attorney and who is continuing to defend Virginia's laws. In addition to that clerk, there's another clerk, the Prince William County Circuit Court clerk, who has intervened in the Norfolk case, and she is represented by a organization called ADF. And so in that case, there are two defendants who continue to defend the law.
So the state of Virginia is one side of the argument. It's just that there are other qualified attorneys making that discussion other than our Attorney General.
Well, right, and instead of representing the state, because the Attorney General does represent the state, these other attorneys represent the local circuit court clerks who are in charge of issuing the marriage licenses.
I would wonder if, and I don't know that you wouldn't expect either of you to have this specific answer, but I wonder if those people feel kind of ditched. Hey, I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do, and now you're leaving me out here to fight this battle by myself or with the attorney. I did read, however, that the state is paying for the legal representation that's taking place for these individuals who are now being the defendants.
Yes, and that's the case by state statute. When a clerk of court or certain other officials like sheriffs are sued for things that they're doing in the course of their official job, the state does pay for their attorneys.
11:13 here on the Wake Up Call. Rebecca, stick with us. We're going to take our first break. We'll be right back, and then I've got a couple questions about some of the political backlashes going on. Jeff Skelly from UVA Center for Politics will have some answers to that. Hang tight, everybody.
Our members are joined by the following underwriters in their support of WNRN.
Sedona Tap House, hosting a craft beer seminar and tasting every Sunday at 1 p.m. Serious Food, and over 500 craft beers with 50 on tap. Discover your new favorite today at 1035 Millmont Street, Charlottesville, 434-296-BEER or SedonaTapHouse.com. You can also find Sedona Tap House in Westchester Commons, Midlothian.
The Gateway Theater in Waynesboro presenting the Dumbwaiters Improv Group on Saturday, February 22nd at 8 p.m. Tickets for a family-friendly evening of laughter with the Dumbwaiters Improv Group on the 22nd can be found at WTAGateway.com. The Dumbwaiters Improv Group, Saturday, February 22nd at the Gateway Theater.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. Brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for being with us today. I'm Rick Moore. This is WNRN and the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Our guest today, Rebecca Glenberg. She's the legal director at the ACLU of Virginia. We also have Jeff Skelly here, UVA Center for Politics, and the associate editor for Larry Sabato's Crystal Ball. So, Jeff, we're talking about the same-sex marriage case in Virginia, focusing a lot on the case down in Norfolk, where Attorney General Mark Herring has stepped aside in terms of representing the state with this. And he said it's because, talk a bit about that, his reasoning for doing that. And then I want to talk about the what I've called the backlash from his decision.
Yes, I believe he's chosen to not defend the case because he is both against it personally and because he believes it's unconstitutional given the recent Supreme Court decisions last summer. At least that's my understanding.
And in doing so, there has been a lot of feedback on his decision. And it seems to be split among party lines. That's not completely the case, as we often see. But Democrat supporters say, oh, good, that's the right decision to make. Republican supporters say, wait a minute, that's not your job. Your job is to defend the laws that are on the books.
Yes. Shortly after Herring came out and said that he would not defend the state's constitutional ban on gay marriage in court, there was kind of an immediate backlash from a number of conservative outlets, internet, a bunch of conservative groups that have actually started circulating a petition to try to have Herring impeached for failing to do his duties. They're saying that he was failing to do his duties. And, you know, that's been supported by groups like the National Organization for Marriage, the Virginia Christian Alliance, the Tea Party. In fact, some language for a draft resolution calling for his impeachment in the General Assembly actually was leaked on the conservative blog Bearing Drift. So there's been movement. The impeachment is very unlikely to actually happen. Like, you're not going to see that process start. The legislation might be introduced to call for that, but these kind of establishment leaders of the Republican Party and the General Assembly would never let it see the light of day, basically.
From what you know, Jeff, and Rebecca, chime in if you have an answer for this as well, is this the Attorney General's job? What does it say in our books about the Attorney General's job? Is his job to fight for the rules and laws that are in our state constitution?
I don't really have an answer to that, actually. So I don't know if Rebecca does.
Rebecca, do you know?
Well, his job is to represent the Commonwealth of Virginia, and the Commonwealth of Virginia is embodied in its government, and the government has changed hands and is no longer so supportive of these laws. So in that respect, I think that he is doing his job. He's also doing his job in the sense that, as he has pointed out on a number of occasions, he took an oath to uphold both the U.S. Constitution and the Virginia Constitution. In this case, they appear to be in conflict, and under our federal system, the U.S. Constitution takes precedence. So that's another reason why it seems appropriate to me, at least, for him to have made this decision.
And when you talk about that, I think we're talking about the Supremacy Clause, correct? Where the U.S. Constitution trumps the state constitution every time.
That's right.
And so when we talk about the same-sex marriage clause or case having been, I don't know, is defeated the right word? Because it seems like in several of these cases, it's just, at least on a national level, federal level, it's where the federal government has said, oh, we're not going to enforce that right now. Am I right or wrong? Explain that in a little more detail.
I'm not sure I know exactly what you're referring
to. So we talk about the Defense of Marriage Act. Right. Is that still a federal law? And the federal government has said, you know what, we're not going to enforce that the way it was originally intended. Or has that is it now federally illegal to oppose same-sex marriage?
Well, it's certainly not illegal to oppose same-sex marriage. But what the Supreme Court said is that that particular section of the Defense of Marriage Act that prohibited the federal government from recognizing same-sex marriages, that provision, the Supreme Court said, was unconstitutional. So the federal government now must, under that Supreme Court decision, recognize all same-sex marriages that were lawfully entered into in the states where those marriages are legal. The federal government really has no say in whether Virginia or other states actually permit such marriages, but when a state does permit same-sex marriages, the federal government now must recognize them and treat them the same as opposite-sex marriages.
Rebecca Glenberg from ACLU of Virginia. So Rebecca, did you see the, I don't know if it's actually news yet or just one of those news leaks before it happens, where Department of Justice is getting ready to instruct federal government lawyers to give same-sex marriages full and equal recognition to the greatest possibility under the law?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly which announcement you're talking about. The Justice Department said something like that very early on after the Defense of Marriage Act was struck down, and each individual agency has been working on how to implement that instruction, you know, with all of the different laws that they administer. So I'm not sure I'm aware of the recent Justice Department announcement, but it sounds consistent with the Supreme Court decision and with all of these other decisions.
All right. So Jeff Skelly, Jeff with UVA Center for Politics. We were talking a little bit about the supremacy law, U.S. Constitution, Trump's state constitutions. And we also sort of threw out this term about, parties shift. Parties that are in control change. And so is that part of what this is about, that the our new governor and our new attorney general are now Democrats after, at least for the attorney general, 20 years or more of having Republican attorney generals in case in leadership? So beliefs change on who's in charge, not necessarily what the Constitution says. At least not fully.
Yes. Mark Herring is the first Democrat to win the attorney generalship since Mary Sue Terry won re-election in 1989. So it's been 20 years since a Democrat has occupied the attorney generalship. And given how this issue very much runs along party lines, Democrats are overwhelmingly supportive of same-sex marriage. Republicans are overwhelmingly against. And the reason that in recent times polling has showed that, at least in Virginia and nationally, that slightly more people favor legalizing same-sex marriage than continuing or than banning it or continuing to make it illegal, independents are slightly more in favor than not. So given this recent shift in the attorney generalship, you see now, you know, this very hot button issue. You see the Attorney General of Virginia refusing to defend the law in front of the state, in front of federal court. And it's funny because we've seen attorney generals in the past do this, except it was Republican King Cuccinelli actually refusing to defend Governor McDonald's failing schools law. But education isn't going to quite get the reaction from people that debates over same-sex marriage will.
Right. Rebecca, understanding as you being a participant in the Harrisonburg case, I can't go into details there, but the backlash against Mark Herring's decision has been that he can't do this. Did any of the others, because Jeff talks about Ken Cuccinelli and a particular case there, Mary Sue Terry, we mentioned at the top of the hour, had a case in terms of she refused to support VMI's all-male all-male acceptance rule. Jerry Kilgore had something to do in 2002 with Liberty University. I can't remember the details. Is this getting far more attention strictly because of the topic, or is it because we've become more partisan?
Oh, I think certainly both of those things have something to do with it. As Jeff pointed out, there's just not going to be the same kind of reaction when the Attorney General refuses to defend a law about education that he perceives to be unconstitutional. So certainly the backlash has everything to do with the polarization in the state and nationally, and the strong feelings that surround this particular issue.
11:25 on the Wake Up Call. That's Rebecca Glenberg from ACLU of Virginia. Jeff Skelly here in the studio with us at UVA Center for Politics. He's also the associate editor for Larry Sabato's Crystal Ball. What was your percentage last national election?
Oh, in terms of being right?
Yes.
It was like 98%.
98%. That's pretty good. And we'll give you all the credit for that, because it's always the associate editors who do all the work and never get any of the praise. Larry Sabato just sitting on his chair, reaping all the rewards that you guys are bringing to him. So, Rebecca, in terms of the feedback for this, the Norfolk case is getting the majority of the media. But has the Harrisonburg case, have there been just as many people just as loudly outside the courts standing there supporting their side of the issue?
Well, in Harrisonburg, we have not yet had a major hearing of the sort that took place in Norfolk last week, where they were actually arguing the substance of the case, the constitutionality of the law. So we've yet to have that kind of event yet in Harrisonburg, so I don't know whether it will draw the same kind of demonstrations when we do.
But I think many people would say that the western part of the state of Virginia is a little more conservative, at least in terms of election outcomes, than the east or the more heavily populated districts, such as Norfolk. Is the expectation that the that there will be just as much or more, or because it's going to be the second case put forth, that it'll just be set aside?
Yeah, I really do not know how to predict that. As you pointed out, it's a generally more conservative part of the state. It's also a generally less populous part of the state. So I don't know how all of that cuts in terms of courthouse protests.
So Jeff Skelly, so when these sorts of cases come to light, the case is here, the topic is announced, you have issues such as the Attorney General making his decision on how the state will represent this clause. There is backlash. We mentioned that. But it's not just the backlash about the decision that was made. There's also a question about why the decision was made. I've heard that because Governor McAuliffe has not really stood up in terms of this, my understanding was that he just sort of said, oh, I agree with this. Not a problem. But Mark Herring is the one who's up front and in front of the camera. Is there a reason for this? Is he being the battering ram while Governor McAuliffe sits on the side?
Well, I think McAuliffe came out and just said, yes, I support what the Attorney General is doing. And given McAuliffe's rhetoric during the campaign, and his very sharp attacks on King Cuccinelli for his opposition to things like same-sex marriage, I would take that to mean that, you know, McAuliffe is very supportive of not defending this law in court. But I do think that Herring was always going to be unlikely to try to defend this, both because of the pure politics of the issue. As a Democrat who might have his eye on running for the governorship sometime in the future, and the way things are going now politically in this country, it's very hard to win a Democratic primary while having anything on your record that speaks of having opposed or to currently be opposing same-sex marriage. So, you know, going forward at the national level, there will be no Democratic nominee who is not, you know, 100% in favor of same-sex marriage. And understanding this, Herring was never going to defend this if he could get out of it, because he might want to run for governor in 2017.
But is he doing this for his own, you know, it seems to me that there are three parts of this and maybe more. He's doing this because of his own personal beliefs, which we sometimes find in politics, and sometimes you step on them and set them aside. He could be doing this because he's the guy taking all the grief for what needs to happen, and Governor McAuliffe doesn't choose to do that. So he's the representative. And then it's his political goals in the future.
Yes.
Because he voted against this however many years ago.
Well, what's interesting is that Herring did vote for, in 2006, shortly after he'd won a special election for the state Senate seat he had in Loudoun and part of Fairfax County, he voted for the ban, but so did all the other senators. It was actually passed on just 40-0 vote. And that was probably because there was no way it was going to be defeated. It had passed in the previous session 30-10, and I expect that probably played a role. So Herring's not the only Democrat who's perhaps changed their tune slightly on this issue in recent times. I mean, the president even came into office when he was elected saying that he favored civil unions of some sort but was against gay marriage, and then, of course, changed his position over time. And I think that's partially because the base of the Democratic Party is so 100% in favor of this that you create trouble for yourself with your own supporters by not being in favor of it.
So it's a little bit of everything there. Do you think he's the face of Governor McAuliffe who doesn't want to get dirty on this?
I think if McAuliffe had to get dirty on this, he would feel comfortable doing it, given that polling would seem to indicate that more people agree with him than don't on this issue, not by like large margins, but by enough. And any politician who's worth his or her salt knows that they want to get on the right side of an issue because it could help politically. But McAuliffe doesn't have to worry about running for re-election. So I expect if he felt like he had to get, you know, weigh in on this more, he probably would. But this, I guess, is Herring's chance to shine, which he'll be happy about because, as I said, he probably is looking to run for governor.
Right, he has future plans.
Yeah.
A few minutes left with Rebecca Glenberg before she has to leave us. Rebecca, a legal director at ACLU of Virginia. Rebecca, one of the things that has come forth is that the two lawyers representing the couple down in the Norfolk case are, what do you want to call them, outsiders. Is that do you think that's going to be an issue? Do you find that, because judges are people, so despite the fact that even the best judges can set aside personal beliefs and outside influences, you know, we have two outsiders coming in to represent the couple. We have the attorney general who has stepped aside. Do these things affect the case even in the slightest ways?
I think that they're unlikely to affect these cases, in either of the two cases. I mean, in both cases, first of all, David Boies and Ted Olson, Mr. Olson is actually a Virginia resident, a Northern Virginia resident, and he has been for some time. So he's not an outsider in that sense. But in both cases, there are both local Virginia attorneys and more nationally known attorneys who are coming in to assist with the cases. And I think that federal judges are very used to that state of affairs, and I don't think it really influences them.
And what about the attorney general's decision? Do you think that plays a role, especially because this gets a lot of notice even before the trial starts?
Yeah, well, I think that certainly both judges will take note of that, and it certainly strengthens the plaintiff's position that the Attorney General agrees with us that the laws are unconstitutional and doesn't want to defend them. But ultimately, both judges are going to be looking very carefully at the case law and the legal reasoning and the analysis and making their decision on that basis.
Rebecca, thank you so much for being with us today. I'm sorry that that I only conned you into staying for 30 minutes and not a full 60.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Rebecca Glenberg, she's the legal director at the ACLU of Virginia. Be right back with continue on with Jeff Skelly.
Today's programming on WNRN is supported by
the Jefferson Theater, presenting Aquanet with special guest Super Unknown on Saturday, February 15th. Tickets for a night of 80s hair metal with Aquanet on the 15th can be purchased at jeffersontheater.com. Aquanet, Saturday night at the Jefferson Theater.
Jess Curry. Jess Curry is at 425 East Main Street on Charlottesville's Downtown Mall. Jess Curry serves Indo-Caribbean curries with vegetarian options Monday through Saturday, now open for dinner on Friday. You can find Jess Curry on Facebook.
Hi, I'm Kristen Twyford from the Virginia Institute of Autism. Start 2014 off on the right foot by registering for VIA's Run for Autism 5K. Join us for a pancake breakfast February 15th from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Vinegar Hill Cafe at the Jefferson School City Center. You can register to run the April 12th race and enjoy a pancake feast benefiting the Run for Autism 5K. For more information, visit viaschool.org/news. I'm Kristen Twyford, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for being with us today. We are talking about the same-sex marriage case. Phone lines open now if you want to call up, 434-979-0919. We had Rebecca Glenberg with us. She's had to return to other duties for the day, other appointments. Rebecca Glenberg, legal director at the ACLU of Virginia. Don't forget, the show will be recorded in a podcast if that's something you missed out early on. CVillePodcast.com. We still have Jeff Skelly with us, which is cool because I have a lot of stuff I still want to go over. Jeff Skelly, UVA Center for Politics, also the associate editor for Larry Sabato's Crystal Ball. So, Jeff, one of the conversations on the same-sex marriage case has been what the state of Virginia people really want. And how, and was it 2006? When
yes.
did this? So 2006, this was put up as a vote to the public on the ballots, and 57% voted to make this a constitutional amendment, same-sex marriage illegal. And now here we are not even 10 years later, and the comments are that, oh, the thoughts have changed, have swayed, and now the majority believes that it should be legal. But it's not that easy to, I mean, even though Mark Herring may choose to follow the sway, it's not that easy for the rules to be changed.
No. In 2006, the constitutional ban on gay marriage was passed in Virginia 57% to 43%. And essentially that, at least from a legislation side, it would be very difficult for there to be any change anytime soon on this issue, even though public opinion has swung very sharply in the other direction, at least when you consider that it's been less than a decade and you have polling. The Christopher Newport's Watson Center had a poll in October that showed that 56% of Virginians opposed the state's ban on gay marriage. And most polling has shown a little over 50% are either in favor of same-sex marriage or at least opposed to the state's current law. And it's very interesting because a lot of times in politics, you don't see, you see very slow movement on an issue, but the momentum, and that's actually a terrible word to use in politics because there's no actual it gets bandied around, used a lot, but usually is a terrible word to use. But in this case, it actually might be worth using, that there's really been momentum to this issue and people's minds have been changed, which how often does that ever actually happen? That and a lot of individuals who can vote now are young people who, you know, when this was passed, were not eligible to vote. Now they, in the sense that they were, you know, still like teenagers or whatever, now they are eligible to vote, and young people are overwhelmingly in favor of same-sex marriage.
It doesn't bother me, so why is it illegal?
Exactly. And in all polling, there's a definite age gap. You talk about the gender gap in some things. Well, in this case, there's an age gap where young people are overwhelmingly in favor of same-sex marriage. And as you go up in age, the support decreases. Though, with that being said, in a lot of polls nationally, it's been shown that even older people have gotten more in favor of it, probably because they see that their, you know, children or grandchildren are in favor of it. And they're like, well, maybe, you know, maybe I'm wrong on this. And so they change their minds. So it's very interesting to see there's been such a significant shift on this in such a short period of time.
But to make it a constitutional amendment in 2006, there had to be two back-to-back years of voting for approval by the state legislature, and then it got sent to the ballot.
Essentially, in Virginia, in a very streamlined way of putting this, but it has to pass through two General Assembly sessions, that language has to pass, and it can't really be changed. And so it has to pass through usually back-to-back, but there is actually more specific language in the Constitution, but two General Assembly sessions, and then by both houses, and then it goes and signed off by the governor, and then it goes on the next election, upcoming election, it's put on the ballot for the voters to have a referendum on. And so in 2005 and in 2006, this language was passed through the General Assembly and signed off by the governor. And in November 2006, the voters actually voted on it. And so you would have to do that process again if you were interested in undoing it. And the way the General Assembly is set up right now, it would be – it's very hard to see that happening anytime soon. And it's because Republicans have an overwhelming majority in the House of Delegates, and that is not going to change anytime soon. Democrats managed to pick up a net gain of one seat in 2013, even though their gubernatorial candidate won. When you're not pulling along more than that, it just kind of shows how, for a variety of reasons, Republicans have a very strong hold on the House of Delegates. And as long as they have that hold on the House of Delegates, you're not going to see legislation passed through that body that would undo this law.
Right. So in 2005 and 2006, it got passed through because the Republicans controlled both sides of the legislature and the governor role.
Well, actually, Tim Kaine was...
Tim Kaine signed off on it?
Well, Tim Kaine was governor in 2006. So he was elected in 2005. But I think he was,
But he's not.
A lot of Democrats voted for this in the 2005 and 2006 sessions. In fact, this was not a party line vote at that time. In fact, roughly about half the Democratic caucus supported it in 2005 when it was first going through. In both houses. I think that's indicative of kind of what kind of changes we've seen
in less
on
than
this
a decade
issue within the parties. It's as the issue has become more and more important it's become important for both sides, but it's become more and more important to be in favor of same-sex marriage, to have any chance of being a Democratic nominee anywhere. That has meant that Democratic politicians and many who voted for this would now say they were against it. And of course that's a real flip-flopping can always get you in trouble in politics, but on this issue I don't think it really has for Democrats.
It's not flip-flopping, it's enlightenment.
Well, I think that's what you would hear liberal activists saying. Yes.
11:44 in the wake up call. Our guest, Jeff Skelly from UVA Center for Politics. We're talking about same-sex marriage in Virginia, some of the decisions that have been made by Attorney General Mark Herring, and how he participates in the state's choice of participation in this lawsuit. Jeff, there are defining issues for each party every year. But this time around, is same-sex marriage going to be still be a defining issue for election in November as it supersedes the conversation now in January and February?
You mean in 2014?
Well, in this November, because this November we will have state elections, correct?
Federal elections.
Only there are no Virginia senators, legislators being elected this time around.
Not in the state house, no.
Okay.
Mark Warner, U.S. senator, is up for re-election, and all members of Congress from the state of Virginia, but no state legislators are up. That won't be until 2015. You'll have the state Senate elections, and you will have the regularly scheduled House of Delegates.
Let's keep it in Virginia, because I'm sure that federally there are all so many other topics.
This isn't going to matter very much.
Right.
This isn't going to matter very much.
It's not going to be a huge percentage of voters making their decision based on this. But how will it carry over to the next state of Virginia elections on a more local level? We know it's 4 years before we have a governor, et cetera. But what will happen? Will each senator, state senator, or legislator be able to say, here's what I think of what happened back in Norfolk and Harrisonburg? Elect me because of that.
Well, I think a lot probably depends on the timeline and outcomes of the court cases. Because you could definitely have a situation where if the courts determine that Virginia's law is unconstitutional and it gets appealed up the ladder, you could have Republicans running on kind of the courts are telling us what to do line, which has been which conservatives have used a lot in the past and with some success. And at the same time, if for some reason a court decided that ban was constitutional, you could have Democrats screaming and about it and getting support that way. So I don't think there's a good clear answer on how this issue is going to really impact things. I think a lot just depends on the court cases and the kind of the public reaction to the outcomes in those court cases.
Jeff, we got a comment here, a question for you. Do you think the youth are really, quote, in favor of this, or more so in favor of letting people do what makes them happy? If it doesn't bother me, then who cares?
I think it's probably a combination of the two, in the sense that, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but I do think that politically, young people are very libertarian on social issues, in the sense that, as the comment says, you know, do what you want if it doesn't bother me. But I think also a lot of young people have, because it is more acceptable in this day and age to be out as a homosexual, that a lot of young people know or are friends with people who are gay. And so if they feel like their friends are being impacted negatively by existing laws, then that makes them more likely to favor undoing those laws if they feel like they're discriminatory. And so I think it's probably a combination of the two.
You don't have to pass your question or comment along. You can call us up and be on air if you choose. 434-979-0919. About 10 minutes left with Jeff Skelly talking about the same-sex marriage case. Jeff, do you foresee, I mean, we're talking about this now. Can Attorney General Mark Herring do something similar in a case with gun control laws or any of the other hot topics? Do you foresee that? Does the crystal ball foresee anything like that coming forth?
The crystal ball is pretty good at campaigns and elections, but when you get into the decisions on what legal cases to defend, I think it gets a little murkier. As we say, those who live by the crystal ball sometimes eat ground glass. So you have to be careful. I really have no real good indication of what to tell you there. I would perhaps say that there aren't really a lot of gun laws in Virginia, so there might not be any to defend. That you know, if I was to be funny about it.
Good point. Let me do this real quick and remind everybody that at noon, WNRN is celebrating the music of the Beatles and the 50th anniversary of their groundbreaking appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show. We'll have Beatles A to Z, today's Beatles special made possible with the support of the Penny Lane Pub in Richmond on Independent Music Radio, WNRN. All right, back a few minutes with Jeff Skelly. Jeff, again, so you talk about the crystal ball and what its abilities are, capabilities are for seeing rules. One of the things that has been talked about is, and just a step away from the same-sex marriage case for a minute, gerrymandering. And I heard or read something upcoming about how someone in the state of Virginia and in other states across the country are talking about bringing in bipartisan independent groups to come in and reset the districts.
Yes, this has been a policy discussion that has gone on for a long time in Virginia and elsewhere. Currently, in most states, including Virginia, after every decennial census, you draw new lines for districts at the congressional level, at the state level, and oftentimes the party in control draws maps that are more favorable to them. You know, they try to pack in the supporters of the other party, of the out-of-power party, into one into districts where there's like 70% of them, and you try to create a map that will allow you to retain majorities in, you know, whether you're talking about Congress or the House or General Assembly. But in some states, as a means to counter this, they have implemented nonpartisan redistricting commissions, or you know, something with that kind of title, where you have a body whose sole responsibility is to try to draw relatively fair lines. And the most recent states to join that club were Washington and California, back before the most recent round of redistricting. And depending on who you're talking to, you might say it was successful or it failed. Democrats, I think, were happy with the map in California because they gained a lot of seats out of it. And so Republicans were unhappy. And Republicans were probably happy in Washington because they actually, considering the state was pretty overwhelmingly for Obama, I mean, by more than 10 points, I believe it's a 6-4 split in favor of the Democrats. And you could have drawn that state, you could have drawn a much more Democratic map in that state, if you had been under kind of the old rules. And so I think there's evidence that shows that the current system isn't really working. So kind of the best of the options out there is to have a nonpartisan redistricting commission of some kind. But of course, there's always going to be complaints about whether it really truly is nonpartisan. New Jersey uses a system sort of like this, and there are always calls that, you know, so-and-so, the tie-breaking vote is always biased in some direction or the other. And so it's difficult to truly have a nonpartisan institution in this day and age.
Wouldn't that make it harder for the crystal ball to do its thing? I mean, if you have so many districts in the state of Virginia, we'll use Virginia as an example, that are clearly drawn to so that one party will win over the other, somewhat almost regardless of who the candidate is, wouldn't that make the crystal ball a little more difficult to see through?
Well, there's no question that it's easier to call a race if the district is heavily predisposed to vote one way or the other. But I think, putting aside whether or not it makes it harder for us to figure out who is leading or not, I think from a kind of for the health of our system, it's probably better to have competitive elections where there ought to be competitive elections, not so much based, you know, rather than members of Congress or members of local or of state legislative districts choosing who their voters are. You know, the voters are supposed to be choosing who their representatives are. And so, you know, I think we would, if we could create, if we could have a system where that, where people were really getting to choose their representatives in a manner that was as fair as we could possibly make it under the circumstances, I think we would accept the challenge of making it harder.
Yes. Well, best wishes on all that happening. So back to the same-sex marriage case real quickly. One of the things we talked up briefly about how those against Attorney General Herring's decision talked about impeaching him and how making that might happen. But one of the other things that has been brought forth for discussion is giving the state, the legislators, the power of attorney. And talk about, you know, what that would do and how that that might actually happen.
Well, it's interesting because the just before the case was heard in Norfolk last week, the House of Delegates in Virginia, basically by a party line vote, there was one Republican who voted with all the Democrats, and there was one Democrat who voted with all the other Republicans. But the House of Delegates passed legislation allowing a chamber in the General Assembly to basically be able to defend a law if the governor or the attorney general chose not to. And so that will never actually become law, at least not in this session, because Democrats essentially would not allow it to get out of the Rules Committee in the Senate, I'm sure. But it's interesting because we saw a similar situation on the national level during the debate over the Defense of Marriage Act. And when the attorney general and the president said they weren't, you know, they're not going to defend that in front of the Supreme Court, the House of Representatives, Republican-controlled House of Representatives, actually passed legislation trying to do that. So there is precedent for this. But as I said, it's unlikely that this would actually become law because the state Senate is controlled by the Democrats, and they wouldn't pass it.
Is it, if not realistic to happen, is it viewed as a realistic working procedure?
I think there are questions about kind of, you know, separation of powers issues that I think you get into with this debate. And I'm not a constitutional scholar, but my understanding is that if you suddenly were to allow a chamber in the legislature to basically act in place of the executive, doesn't that take power away from the executive, or at least hold the potential to create more conflict between the executive branch and the legislative branch? I can see why you might get into some constitutional issues doing that.
Last question or two with Jeff Skelly from UVA Center for Politics. So we talked about briefly about how the actions might affect Mark Herring in terms of pro and con for his political future. Are there others within the state? Bob Marshall immediately comes to mind, who the actions made by the attorney general will greatly benefit or possibly bring detriment to their political careers.
I think, generally speaking, this is Mark Herring's chance to shine, I guess, in the public sphere, because really, when you're looking at the 2017 situation, remember, in Virginia, we're the only state where the governor cannot run for re-election, immediate re-election. You can get elected 4 years later down the line, which Mills Godwin actually did. He was elected in 1965 and then later in 1973, but you can't run for immediate reelection in the state of Virginia. And because Democrats swept the three statewide offices, you have a very obvious conflict point between having a Democratic attorney general and a Democratic lieutenant governor both waiting in the wings for the governor. And so it's a chance for Herring to kind of make his play for support from the Democratic base, because Ralph Northam in the state Senate, at least until the next round of state Senate elections, is going to have an opportunity probably to cast some tie-breaking votes. That the chamber is currently tied 20-20, And Northam is the tiebreaker vote in favor for Democrats. And that was how Democrats were able to reorganize it after Northam was elected lieutenant governor. And that might give Northam an opportunity to perhaps, you know, some hot button issues to break ties in such a way that would make him look more favorable to the Democratic base voting in a primary in 2017. So, you know, I think Herring, you know, whatever his personal beliefs are, was never going to defend this for political reasons as well.
Thanks to Jeff Skelly for being with us today. We really appreciate you coming in on a nice February Sunday.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Also, thanks to Rebecca Glenberg for being with us by phone, legal director, ACLU of Virginia. You can hear the whole show, cvillepodcast.com. Beatles A to Z coming up next.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Brandon Wong and Max Cecilia Struther. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.